Hello and welcome to Mohawks Meet the Team series, a podcast dedicated to the team behind creating the strategy title, Old World. We get to know more about them and their work on the project. This week we'll be interviewing Nathan Glombowski, the lead animator for Mohawk Games, and we get to learn more about his unique childhood and how he got into animating. So stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Nathan.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Very glad to have you. So this is the inaugural episode of the Mohawk Games podcast, wherein we're going to take some time to introduce the people, the staff, the great people of Mohawk Games, and kind of get to know them a little bit. So you are our first victim. Welcome.
I get to be the guinea pig.
Exactly. So what I'd like to do with this show is to kind of get to know you a little bit more. So if you could tell me a little bit about yourself, Nathan.
Yeah. So I'm 35. I like long walks on the beach.
Awesome.
I live in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I have my wife, Megan, who's a nurse, and our two sons, Cohen and Orson, and one of which is just a little over a month old now. I'm an animator. I've been doing this for coming up on 12 years now.
Awesome. Congratulations on the new baby.
Thank you. He's been a lot of fun and a lot of sleepless nights.
I know that all too well. I've got three of myself, and there was long periods of time where I didn't sleep much, so I feel your pain. Did you grow up in Tulsa?
No. I actually grew up not in the States at all. I was born in Pennsylvania, but most of my formative years I grew up in Outer Mongolia, which is country between Russia and China.
Wow. There are a lot of answers I expected, none of which were Mongolia. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So my parents were missionaries. And so in 92, we went over there basically right after the Soviet Union fell and the country opened up. So we were some of the first Americans in there. And that was pretty much where I grew up, doing mission work, aid work.
Could you tell me a little bit more about that? I'm just curious to know, like, what was life like there?
At first, it was rough. It's funny thinking back now, because when you're a kid, it's just whatever is normal. And, you know, at first, it's like bread lines and like all the... I watched the show Chernobyl recently, and it's like, yeah, that looks exactly like my childhood. It's like all the same concrete buildings that's common in Soviet era. But as a kid, it was actually pretty great in a lot of ways, just because we had a lot of, you know, freedom. For several years, we lived out in the middle of the desert and just playing with our Mongolian friends and stuff. And it's kind of sad now, because I wish I could give my son the freedom I had as a kid. But, you know, in the city and in the States, it's a little more dangerous, oddly enough, than when I was in a third world country. It's different. It makes it hard to relate, because if you tell a story from your childhood, it just sounds outlandish, when it's just like, no, this was just normal.
How long did you live there?
I went over when I was 8, and I came back when I was 17.
So then that begs the question, how did you get into animation?
Ever since I could know what I wanted to do, I wanted to do animation. Like, I remember in first grade, I either wanted to be an astronaut or an animator, and I suck at math, so astronaut was out. Animation was more attainable. And so I messed with, you know, the typical stuff, flip books and all that. And then at one point I had my dad build me a animation desk, which is basically like a desk with a piece of glass on it and a light behind it, so you can see your previous drawings and flip through. And then I would do what a lot of early animators did, and you take a camera and you kind of turn it on and off and flip the pages, and you could kind of make rough animations that way. And then Jurassic Park, Toy Story, all these early, really impressive CG films came out with amazing animation at the time and still. And that was like a light bulb moment, where it's like, I want to do that. And then I think I found like a old piece of software, probably doesn't even exist anymore, called, I think it was Animation Master. Really, really basic now by today's standards, but it was like $100, and that was my window into animation.
And so I assume that after 17, you came back stateside. Did you actually start animating in the professional world when you came back stateside, or did you go through schooling?
No. So I went to a Bible school for a couple of years, and then I got married and started like chimney sweeping, of all things, preparing chimneys, chimney sweeping, and got asked to sing Mary Poppins a lot. And was like, animation was one of those things where it's just like, it felt like it wasn't attainable when you have a family and whatnot. I was like, man, I don't know if I can take care of, you know, a family doing art. It's always just that stereotype of starving artist. And I was it just seemed unreasonable, but it was never something that left my mind. And then I fell off a roof and I was like, you know what? I need to get out of this. I'm going to take my shot at it. And I went and signed up for a school called Animation Mentor, which was kind of just starting at the time. And it was an online animation school, which was great. I didn't have to go anywhere. I could keep working part-time. And it's basically like a trade school of sorts, just focused on animation. Didn't have to do all the prerequisites and all the things that can take up a lot of time. And so 18 months later, I graduated from that, and it was 2008, and the crash had just happened, and it was like the worst time to be looking for work. And so I kept looking, and finally got offered a job at a place in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And at that point, I was just like, I think I was like a week away from my unemployment running out. I was just like, I'll take whatever. I don't care. And so like literally sight unseen, packed up and drove halfway across the country from where I was in Portland at the time to Tulsa. And I've been here ever since.
Nathan, you're full of surprises. I did not expect you to say you were a chimney sweeper. And then I immediately wanted to hear some Mary Poppins. And now we're in Tulsa and you're an animator. I just, the series of events that have led you here have been very surprising, I've got to admit.
Yeah, it's, I imagine most animators are a little bit that way. It's not a normal job.
So where did you start off at in Tulsa?
There's a place called Steelhouse, which it's not even called that anymore. I worked there for many years, and it was one of those things where starting out, every animator wants to work at Pixar, DreamWorks, and all that. And it actually ended up being a really good thing because working at a smaller studio, I had to do things other than animation. I had to learn, you know, all the parts of the pipeline. And ultimately, that's made me a better animator because when I put together a shot, if it was for something more cinematic, it's like I've learned how cameras work and cinematography. And I know when I'm animating something, how that's going to be passed on to the next chain in the pipeline. And so even if it's not the thing that you're most passionate about, because animation, like I'd be happy just animating all day and never modeling or rigging or rendering or any of that. If you can learn those other things, even just as a side, like that's for me been invaluable in making my animation and just the way I work with other people a lot easier and a lot better.
So where was your next step?
My next step was Mohawk, actually. That was the thing that got me fully into games. I'd done games for this other studio in the past. A lot of virtual reality work was in the early days of that, and loved it. Loved the limitations of games in some ways. You have to work within an engine, within performance limits and all this. And that's just a really fun challenge. And it felt like the forefront of just animation in general. You know, movies have kind of mastered it. They pushed the quality and it's incredible. But games felt like a new frontier where you're having to make it, you know, not only look good, but look good and interactive. And that's just a really fun challenge to me.
So how did Mohawk find you?
Actually, it was a friend who had done some work for them that was like, hey, I think they're hiring. And I was like, oh, I'll throw my hat in. He highly recommended the people there. And I was like, yeah, I'll give it a go. And sent my reel in and I think got a call back and they did an interview. And I guess I went out because here I am.
Here you are. How long have you been with Mohawk so far?
A bit over a year. Yeah, like a year and 2 months.
Very good. And can you tell me a little bit more about what your responsibilities are at Mohawk?
I'm the lead animator, which means I end up not only animating things, but also rigging things, implementing them into the game, working with the programmers and other artists to make sure everything's kind of fitting together for the needs that we have. And that ends up being a lot of push and pull where it's like animators are always going to want, you know, gameplay animations to take more time for things to bounce and settle and cool little flourishes and all that. And often as not, that doesn't make for very good gameplay. So it's always that push and pull. And thankfully, everyone at Mohawk is really understanding and willing to hear others out. And it's never like a fight. It's just we're all working together to try and find the best thing that will work for the game. And that's a lot of fun. And it's cool to see other people's perspectives on what's important in a game, because we all come at it from our own disciplines. And the programmers are just going to be worried about, oh my gosh, there's like 50 animating things and this is killing performance. And I'm like, but it's beautiful.
Other people appreciate it. So that's great.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. But yeah, it's a lot of a mix of art and technical, I think, as much as anything. Probably about, 75% of my day is, animation, art stuff, and then the other 25% is rigging and implementing it in the game.
So with the title like lead animator, I imagine that you probably assume a supervisory role sometimes?
Yeah. So with the other animators that we've had on, it's a lot of, taking the characters that you have, and the way we break it out is I'll assign them a character. And in our game, we usually have a version of a character and then the elite version of the character. So if somebody's done the regular version, I'll usually have them do the elite, and just trying to walk them through and communicate, what I want this to look like or this and that, while also trying to give them some freedom to be creative. And then the hardest thing, especially working remote like we do, is communicating what you want in animation when you can't like act it out or use sound effects, because that's a big part of how animators communicate, is just very, very physical and, using noises and like to try and communicate the feel of what you want. And so that's been a challenge over the last year with the pandemic and everything, is just learning other tools for how to communicate that you can't do in person.
Yeah, I can see that being quite the roadblock. And you mentioned the pandemic, and it sounds like you came on to Mohawk right before the pandemic. So have you had the opportunity to meet the rest of the team?
Yes, thankfully I was able to fly out there a couple times and meet my coworkers, which was really nice, especially before all this started, just to be able to build those relationships in person a bit. And the reason I flew out initially was to do some mocap sessions, which unfortunately now there's lots of footage out there of me in a spandex suit doing ridiculous things.
Yeah, we'll make sure to link those in the comments below. That's great to hear. So, I mean, you get to go out and fly out there, meet the team. And then since then, help me understand what your workflow is like. Do you receive stuff from the programmers and say, hey, like, this is what we want? And then you kind of work with them to implement it?
Yeah. Yeah. So at this point, in the early days, we're kind of locking down our animation system, which is a lot of it's in the combat and just how we wanted things to look and the timing of things. That's probably the hardest thing on the animation side, is everything needs to be snappy, because, if you've got a bunch of units doing this and that, you don't want it to take forever. Otherwise, people will just turn off the animation because it just takes too long. And so trying to stay within, in our case, about a second and a half window for any given action is probably the biggest challenge, just to make something work when, if you have a big unit, like we had the settler, who's like basically three different characters, and how do you make them convincingly, get attacked and die in a second and a half? And so those are the fun challenges. And so far, I feel like we've solved them pretty well. We haven't run into anything that just didn't work. But yeah, it's a lot of that.
And you mentioned that. And I'm curious to know, like, what has been the toughest part about animating Old World?
Oh, man. It's the toughest part, and probably the funnest part, is just the sheer variety of types of units. You've got, human units with all sorts of different weapons and armor and stuff on them. And then you'll go from that to a camel, and then a chariot, which is a couple of horses, pulling something, and all those interactions. And then somebody riding a water buffalo. And it's just, it's so much variety that you're constantly having to shift mental gears on the next character. But that's like incredibly fun and rewarding too, because you get a chance to practice so many different kinds of things. I mean, I'd never had reason to animate an elephant before, but now I get to not only animate an elephant, but one with, all sorts of armor and stuff on them. And that's just fun. It's fun to be able to stretch your muscles that way.
Yeah, for sure. How do you go about animating an elephant? I mean, it's not like you have an elephant to reference. So like, how do you go about doing that? And how does that process work?
I mean, it's like with so many things, you go to YouTube, you go to Google, and you find things that are as close as you can. With the, combat animations for something like that, you're not going to find anything. So you might go a little more far field, and there's like war elephants and Lord of the Rings. And so you, even though they're more fanciful, you try and pull what you can from what, other animators have done and found that works and stuff like that, and try and implement it into a little bit more realistic setting. And then for the other part of it, you just use your imagination and your experience with just how physics and bodies work, and kind of combine all that and hope it looks good.
I have to ask this question. Did you ever get a chance to ride an elephant in Mongolia? Is that something that even happens?
They don't have elephants, but I did ride a camel on the Great Wall of China. So that's good reference, I guess.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. Yeah. That's so, you know, infrequent that you'd actually maybe even ride some of these animals that maybe most Americans wouldn't.
Yeah, for sure.
So before you came to Mohawk, what was your experience like with Mohawk? Did you know about their games prior to joining on with them?
Yeah. So I played Off-World Trading Company, and it's one of those things where sometimes you'll play a game and you'll not even fully realize who made it, which is terrible, but probably happens more often than I'd like. And so when I saw Mohawk, I was looking at their stuff. I was like, oh, I wonder if I've played any of their games. And sure enough, I had. So that was nice when it's a developer that you were already a fan of and you didn't even know it.
Soren's kind of a legend in a lot of ways. And
yeah.
Speaking of which, have you ever played a 4X game in the past?
I played a lot of strategy games in general as a kid. One of the first games I ever bought was like the first Age of Empires. And then, of course, you know, Civilization games and whatnot. So, yeah, thankfully, I've had a lot of experience with that, you know, late nights of one more turn. And so it's fun to actually get to work on that now, which I never would have thought of as a kid.
Yeah. And so how does that change your ability to play Old World? I mean, do you play Old World, or is it kind of hard to play what you're working on?
Well, now it's more a matter of, because I'm making Old World, I don't have time to play Old World. I'm too busy making it. But it is funny because now I definitely, I critique my part of it more harshly, I guess. I don't feel like I can speak into the game design portions nearly as well as the, you know, QA team or, of course, Soren. But I'm, yeah, now I see a bird flying by and I'm like, I don't know if that wing flap quite right, that kind of thing. So I'm probably more distracted than anything when I play it.
Literally distracted by the birds. Awesome. So what, in your spare time, if you do have time, what kind of games do you play for fun?
Really anything that I can get a hold of. I just played through Cyberpunk, you know, Assassin's Creed. There's always those big staple ones. Always love playing Halo games. I'm playing on the strategy side. Right now, I'm also playing a strategy game called Iron Harvest, which you don't get RTSs very often anymore. So it's always fun when one of those comes along. I used to play a lot of, you know, Command & Conquer and that kind of thing when that was a thing. And so anytime there's a new strategy game, I'll usually try and jump into that just because it feels like a rare treat. Yeah, I mean, Hades sucked me in for a long time on the Switch. Luigi's Mansion beat recently. Yeah, I try and play everything that I can, which with a baby is kind of good and bad because often I'm up late because he's not sleeping. So that gives me more time to play, but then I'm not sleeping. So it's a balance.
Yeah, I can speak from experience too. My Switch came in handy a lot when I had a newborn because that was just something I could have in my hand while I was, you know, waiting for the next time for the child to wake up.
Absolutely.
So what do you think appeals most to you or maybe the target audience about the setting of Old World?
I think it's just been the fact that it's so surprising, that just the little historic details. So like Layla will have some event or just mention something in passing. And it'll be like, I had no idea that happened. That sounds like a plot line from Game of Thrones or something like that. It's just the history really has some crazy, crazy moments, crazy leaders and people. And it's just, yeah, it's fascinating. And I think that they've done an amazing job of integrating that into a game, which isn't easy. Cause I mean, you've basically put a history book in gameplay format, and that's hard to make entertaining, hard to make work, and it works really, really well.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, some of the stuff that's happened in the past is just stranger than life, right? It's just stranger than fiction, and some of it you just wouldn't believe was real unless it had actually been recorded and written down. So Nathan, could you tell me a little bit about some of the things that you've been inspired from, like some of the games that you think are doing animations really well or things that you look back and take inspiration from?
Yeah, probably in the last year, stuff like The Last of Us 2, the animation, just the level of quality in that was just astounding. I mean, such a big game, and to maintain the characters with that fidelity for that long is just mind-blowing. I can't even wrap my head around it. In the other media space, I mean, The Mandalorian has been amazing, and just the groundbreaking effects stuff they've done with that and Unreal. I'm a huge fan of using real-time game engines for film and stuff like that. I really think that's the future. And so seeing that come to the forefront has been really fun. I'm sad that I haven't been able to go to theaters and see more of the kind of things that would normally inspire me. Probably most recent like animated film would be something like Enter the Spider-Verse. That was just, oh my gosh, so much fun. such an incredible pushing of the medium as a whole. Not something that's obviously directly connected to the type of animation I do in Old World, but definitely inspiring.
Well, and speaking of which, did you start off with 2D animation and then work your way to 3D animation? I mean, and what's the transition like for that?
Yeah, so I did 2D animation more as a kid because that's what I had available. But really, as soon as I had access to 3D animation, that became my main drive and the thing that I try to get the most, you know, good at. But I still love 2D animation, and I'm not as good at it as I am at 3D animation, but it's definitely still something I enjoy doing when I have the time.
Very good. So I'm being shown a picture of Orson, right? Is that Orson in the
yes.
chat here? All
yes,
right.
That is Orson.
He's handsome. He's very cute. He's dressed like Baby Yoda. Is that, or am I just looking into it?
Nope. That is definitely Baby Yoda. Yeah. We're a big fan of The Mandalorian. And so it seemed natural that when you have a baby, what else are you going to do with them?
I love it. I wish that was more of a trend because it's adorable. You mentioned The Mandalorian before. Are you a big Star Wars fan?
Oh, yeah. No, you can't see it, but I've got Batman inked on one arm and Star Wars on the other. So, yeah, one of my favorite memories of watching a movie ever was when I lived in Mongolia. I was probably 10 years old, and we lived literally out in the middle of the desert. And we had this living room that was really just a hallway that had a little tube TV in it. And somebody from the States sent us the, like, special edition Star Wars or whatever. And so me and probably 30 of my friends all gathered in this itty bitty hallway and watched the first Star Wars movie, or Episode 4. And my mom, like, translated for the kids. And just the, I don't know, just the kids, even though completely different country, completely different culture, just the way they interacted with the movie, you know, everybody just exploding and cheering when the Death Star blew up was just the coolest thing. And then, fun side fact, in Return of the Jedi, the Ewoks speak Mongolian for a little bit.
Oh, no way. Really?
Yeah, there's a section in there where they just say a couple of straight up Mongolian phrases.
That's awesome. Did you understand it?
Yeah. Yeah. It was bizarre when I watched through that. And I was like, wait a second. They just said what the subtitle said.
That's great. Now, I'm curious, do you still speak Mongolian?
I mean, I do. I'm sure I'm super rusty. I haven't run into a Mongolian since I came to the States. So, like, you know, 15 years or whatever, or not 18 years. I'm sure I'm super rusty, but yeah, not a very useful language, which is sad because it's one of the harder ones for English speakers to learn, but yeah.
All right. I hate to put you on the spot. Can you just say something like pretty ordinary? Like maybe, how are you?
Yeah. So it's Samanominiatin be a Mohawk animator.
I'm impressed.
It's just, hi, my name's Nathan. I'm a animator at Mohawk.
Do you speak any other languages?
I know some dead Greek, but not, can't speak it. It's dead.
That's super cool. I really just admire people who can speak more than one language because I don't know for you, like, you were born here in the United States, but then I imagine Mongolian probably was the primary language you spoke for so long. Did it get to the point where you had to translate, you know, English into Mongolian and vice versa?
No, I mean, we spoke English in the house, so it was never, like, supplanted by Mongolian. But yeah, I mean, you get to the point where you're, like, dreaming it or something. And so, yeah. But yeah, again, like, it's sad when you spend so much time learning a language or just being in it to then not being able to use it at all. But yeah, not a common language, that's for sure. I would have been better off with Spanish or French, I guess.
Yeah, maybe just a little bit easier to learn, because what you just said was amazing. It didn't even sound anything like language to me, which is amazing. So I have to know, you mentioned the mocap suit earlier. Tell me more about that.
So we've dabbled with motion capture, which is in some of the animations in the game, and which is super fun to play with and really useful, especially for longer form stuff with a smaller studio. Just having access to that technology now in such a small form factor without having to have a giant studio is really powerful. Probably the hardest thing with mocap is just the limitations of your own body. And so we have a lot of kind of brutal deaths and people flying across to, you know, the field or whatever. And so I did some of that with lots of pads, but there's some of our deaths that I definitely could not do safely.
And I understand that mocap suit's still in your house.
Yes, it is. Yep. Right. The pandemic gave me a mocap suit to use. I probably should do more stuff with it. I'm sure I could make lots of embarrassing things by just putting it on random characters.
Well, that was my question next, is if whether or not you're still using it.
All the things that I would love to use it for, I probably shouldn't.
Awesome. So, I mean, in order to like sharpen your skills and stuff, are you trying to animate things on the side, or are when you're done with work, are you just done with animating?
I probably should be, but no, I can't stop. Like, so I'll be like sitting watching a TV show or whatever, and like, oh, I did like a little Baby Yoda 2D animation on my iPad while watching TV. It's just like, yeah, it's probably not healthy, but like, I'm always feel like I need to be creating something. I make myself like take at least one weekend, you know, day a week where I don't allow myself to create, because otherwise it's just constant.
That's a good, I mean, like clearly you're doing what you love. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah. Can't complain.
So when you do animate, I mean, how experimental are you getting? Are you doing some stuff that's like completely out of the old world setting?
Yeah. So like, well, with Baby Yoda, obviously, that's doing something cartoony. My wife and I, we made a couple short films together over the summer. We did like a live action one that integrated some CG into. She was pregnant at the time, and so made a short film about a like an asteroid coming down. And it's like, you know, killing your pregnant wife in a short film is... It's like you got to take advantage of the pulling those heartstrings while she's pregnant, because I won't be able to make that film again. And then I did another one just trying to push myself with the tools in Unreal Engine, just making a film entirely in real time using like free access from Quixel and stuff like that. So I'm always trying to like play with stuff and see where I can push things, how I can get more efficient and stuff like that.
Are you posting these films anywhere?
Yeah, they're all on YouTube.
Would you mind sharing that?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, then you'll be finding that in the summary below, I'm sure. So I'm curious, if you had the opportunity, where would you want to branch out into? I mean, you've mentioned Pixar being like the holy grail of animation. I mean, is that something you'd still want to do if you had the opportunity?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'd be super cool to work at Pixar. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I had to pick like kind of one bucket list, it would be to work on something officially Star Wars at some point. Yeah, that would be the big one for sure.
Yeah. And when you mentioned, I guess they're using the Unreal Engine to do some of that animation. So, I mean, again, as someone who's pretty ignorant to all this, like, how does that translate to what you're doing? Like, how are you animating, and how does that maybe translate to like an Unreal Engine animation?
It's definitely related, because animating for a game engine is a little bit different than what you could do if you're just staying in something like Maya. There's deformers and all these different kind of tools that you can use if you're staying in one package that don't translate to a game engine. They just it makes it harder. And there's things you can do to get around that by, like, you know, cashing out the geo and stuff like that. But yeah, if you have a familiarity with games and game engines, it definitely gives you a leg up, because you're going to be able to, you know, jump in day one and push things and know what you're doing. Otherwise, for the movie studios who've only worked the kind of slow way of animating things, I guess, if you will, and these like very high-end things, they've really probably are having a lot of their normal tools that they would use taken away and having to rework how they think about things. So yeah, it's kind of cool to see the game world and the movie world merging a bit.
Yeah, and until you said so, I didn't know that The Mandalorian was using the Unreal Engine. I would have never known and never thought. I mean, that is kind of cool to know that they are combining in that way. And I feel like at some point they might just be one and the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, ILM's been experimenting with that stuff for a while. There's actually, I think, a couple shots in Rogue One where K2SO was rendered in Unreal and nobody could tell the difference. So that was kind of a good proof of concept, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm just curious if we can circle back around to like real life here for a second. And we have been in a pandemic for almost a year now. How has that affected you in your like normal life?
I feel bad how little it's affected me, because I was already working from home. It was not nearly as disruptive as it could have been. Probably the biggest effect is just my wife's a nurse, and so just that sense of her being in more danger than usual was the hardest thing. But thankfully, like, unbeknownst to us, without it in mind, before the pandemic started, like by like a week, she had switched jobs from hospital, where she would have been much more in the middle of COVID stuff, to like a post-op position where she was with people who were more likely to be tested before coming to her. We feel like we dodged a bullet there. But yeah, I mean, I think the hardest thing is just I love to travel, and that's been off the table, you know, not being able to take advantage of that. But I feel very, very blessed that I never had to stop working thanks to Mohawk and their willingness to just do remote and having just stability in this time just feels like a amazing blessing.
Yeah. I mean, my heart goes out to all the nurses out there and all the healthcare workers that are just out there on the front lines dealing with this.
Absolutely.
It is a blessing to hear that your wife, I mean, especially, I imagine she was probably pregnant during some of that. And
That's scary.
Yeah. Being able to kind of come off the front lines a little bit. You mean you're still in a position, right? She's still doing God's work really. And that's amazing. So yeah, my wife's also in the healthcare industry. So I feel you. She's out there too. And it just, you know, it makes you nervous. You know,
it does.
You love these people very much. So you don't want them to get hurt and you don't want them to get sick.
Yep, absolutely.
And so I imagine you have at least one kid in online schooling, right?
Yeah, that's been interesting just because it's been, at least here, a lot of flip-flopping where it'd be in person and then not, and then in and then not. And I actually just got his report card today and he's amazing because he got almost straight A's, which is impressive considering how disrupted this last school year has been.
It has been wild, right? We were actually given the opportunity here to just either start primarily and entirely online or do like a mix of both. And we opted to go completely online because we were just worried about going back and forth. And, you know, it is tough for kids. I can't imagine. I can barely sit in front of a TV screen for more than a few minutes and they're on it almost all day. It's impressive that they've kind of adapted that well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. It's really tough. And it makes life harder for them. It makes it harder for the parents and the teachers and everybody. It's just, regardless of the situation or decisions the schools are making, I just feel bad for everybody because it's not ideal.
No, it's not at all. Do you have a large family?
No, I just have one brother. He does music and stuff. I'm actually like the only non-musical person in my family. Yeah, we're really close. He lives down in Austin, so we used to get to visit them every now and then, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel like music and art are still, you know, they're of the arts, right? So they're kind of...
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, they're still similar. And, you know, of course, with music, you have that creative edge too. And so I imagine you guys still stay pretty connected though, even if you're not able to see each other?
Yeah, we do. And that may be a result of just us being all we had for times in Mongolia there. But yeah, I'm very, very thankful to have such a close relationship with him.
So Nathan, can you tell me a little bit about what the path ahead of you looks like in regards to finishing up Old World?
Yeah, so it's a lot of just looking at the units you have left and working through them. I feel like, I'm sure we'll run into more things, but we've worked out most of the kinks in terms of what we want from the animation and what the characters need to do and all that. But now it's just a lot of hunkering down and pushing through them. But I'm excited just the way that the units have come out of from the modelers and texture artists and stuff is... A lot of the stranger units or more unique ones are coming up at the end here. So I'm really looking forward to being able to touch those.
Yeah. So I imagine some of like the special units, like the faction specific units haven't been touched yet. Cause that's what I've noticed playing the game.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Very good. And then what's beyond that? I imagine that probably towards the end, you've completed most of the animation. Do you assume any other roles here at Mohawk?
We'll see. I guess that depends on what's next for Mohawk and what things look like after Old World ships.
Awesome. And would you mind telling me, you mentioned a little bit before about bringing on some contractors for animation. Could you tell me a little about some of the people you brought on?
Yeah. So Kai and Ashley were the two main animation contractors we brought on, and they were such a huge help and really fun to work with. It was great just to be able to give them stuff and know that it was going to get done.
Yeah. It's really nice to be able to rely on somebody like that. So I understand they're actually pretty good, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, they were really good sports and really, really thankful how good they were at dealing with feedback that I'm sure wasn't always clear, again, like you said, because of having to communicate it not in person. And I felt like we found a really good rhythm.
That's great to hear. And I'll have to be honest with you, Nathan, as a lead up to our interview here, I was talking to some of the people there at Mohawk and most of them had very nice things to say about you. So I know that they all respect you and appreciate what you're doing. So, you know, the feeling is, you know, mutual for a lot of people there. So.
Oh, that's awesome. No, I'm so, so thankful to be a part of this team. It's just been the best experience and man, just such a frictionless workplace, I guess.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. And everything I've heard about Mohawk Games has been just very positive. And I'm sure that you being one of many that I've heard just proclaim how inclusive that work environment is just makes me feel very good. And
anyways, for my part, I just wanted to say that I've been with Old World since the very beginning. I was in there with the alpha, like the very earliest alphas, and I saw a lot of these static units, you know, running around, and it was cool. But, you know, I've been able to see how your team's animations and your animations have brought this game to life and have made it something that just really kind of feels very immersive. So, you know, my hat's off to you. You guys are great. You're very good at what you do.
Awesome. Well, there's loads more to be added. So hopefully it continues to surprise.
Yeah, awesome. So where can we find you? Are you on social media?
Yeah, so I'm at Nathanimator on Twitter. And then I think it's Nglemb, N-G-L-E-M-B on YouTube. But if you just search for Nathan Glemboski, I'm sure I'll pop up. Probably the first thing will pop up was a video I made with my son years ago playing Pac-Man with marshmallows that has like 50 million or something views now. So if you see that, that is actually me.
Oh, that's awesome. Great. So we'll make sure to link those in the comments below. And Nathan, thank you so much for joining me. It's been really great to get to know you.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Rob.